This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's our weekly review of stories affecting the tri-state. WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Managing Editor, Opinion and Engagement David Holthouse, WVXU City Hall Reporter Jay Hanselman, and WVXU Political Reporter Howard Wilkinson will be here later in the show to review the news from Cincinnati. Joining me first as we take a look at what's going on in Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati and Kentucky Inquirer River Cities Reporter Scott Wortman and Northern Kentucky Tribune Managing Editor Mark Hansel. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Scott and Mark, thank you for being here today.
Good Always to see
you.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Scott, latest in the Brent-Spence Bridge debate, the head of the Ohio-Kentucky-Indiana Regional Council of Governments, Mark Polasinski, he writes an editorial about for the Inquirer about the Brent-Spence Bridge, and what did he have to say?
Well, he just was actually encouraging the governor to take action on it. He never really mentioned the four-letter word of tolls.
Toll.
other than to say that delaying building the bridge would be a delay toll because the cost of doing business is going up. But it largely went by unnoticed. Then all of a sudden, the anti-toll group was calling for Polasinski's head, saying he's politicking, he shouldn't be doing this, this is a quasi-government organization, how dare he, demanding the Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana Regional Council of Governments investigate it. And it was kind of surprising since the bridge issue really has kind of been dormant for a few years now. No one's stepping forward to pay $2.6 billion for a new bridge. So it was kind of surprising that this became a big issue. But tolls really gets people emotional in Northern Kentucky.
And yeah, my read on the editorial was he was just urging Matt Bevin to be expedient.
Correct.
And to make sure that you don't miss an opportunity here to get funding for this project. I mean, that's how I read it.
Yes, yes. And that is correct. But a lot of this has to do with the Covington mayoral race. This is going to be a big issue. Sherry Caron, the incumbent for the last 4 years, she's been on record saying, while she doesn't like tolls, she accepts the fact that that's the only way to get the bridge built, while her opponent, former state senator Joe Meyer, who is one of the leaders central to the Northern Kentucky United, the anti-toll group that sent out the letter slamming Polasinski, he's been adamant saying this would ruin Covington if we build this bridge the way it's designed, and tolls are a penalty for Northern Kentuckians who are going to be using the bridge more than Ohioans. So that's kind of why this has come back up, because he wants this as an issue that's alive and well for the mayoral race to run on.
Mark, the Northern Kentucky Tribune had an article about this as well. What is it specifically that these leaders who are upset about what Polasinski had to say in his editorial, what exactly are they asking OKI to do?
Well, you know, I think it has more to do with someone in that role taking an editorial position. I know, you know, there are times when maybe it's better just to let the issue play itself out.
They're actually asking, though, for an investigation, though, right? for this whole thing to be looked into. Yeah,
that's correct. But I think as we pointed out earlier, we're kind of investigating something that is, you know, a long way down the road at least.
So. And something that's been sitting dormant for a long time.
Because again, no one, neither the state nor the federal government, wants to step forward with $2.6 billion to get that bridge built and renovated.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. You can also email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Has Mark Polasinski had any response that he's...
He didn't want to comment initially. The chairman of the OKI board, who's a Dearborn, Indiana county commissioner, said that they were going to craft a response, although they also had no comment. But I got the impression that the OKI board, there's no real will to do anything about this. I think they're just going to let it pass. They might make a statement defending him, but so far they haven't done anything. And Mark Polasinski didn't want to comment on the record. I think he just wants to move. Hopefully it just fades into the past.
To move on.
But the toll issue has been around for 25 years, so I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon.
The whole bridge issue has been around for decades.
And, yeah.
You know, and I have to wonder if either one of you has some thoughts on, you know, what is the holdup? Is this strictly a holdup over how it gets funded?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money. There's crumbling infrastructure throughout the nation. There's limited funds. People who want this, well, everybody wants this bridge, but the people who want it the most are arguing, look at how much traffic, you know, this bridge carries and what would happen if it were, you know, restricted or shut down or whatever. And, you know, there's only so many dollars. So when you're looking at that, you have to ask yourself, are we ever going to get this funding? Or is it going to take something pretty severe for the funding to be put in place?
And it really comes down to you're not going to get congressmen and senators from other areas of the country to say, well, we'll pay for your bridge, but we'll toll our project. And with other bridges and other highways being tolled, you're not going to get we're not going to get special treatment from people outside our area. And it's right now just a standoff between the state isn't going to pay for it, and the feds are like, well, you have to pay for it yourself. And no one's budging.
And I guess the feds are kind of watching about what Ohio and Kentucky, since the bridge touches both states, they're watching what kind of an agreement the two states can come to.
Yeah, they are. But again, no one's budging. And now with Steve Beshear, the former Kentucky governor, out of office, he was one of the big proponents of tolling the bridge and let's get this forward. Bevin, who's a Republican governor, not so much. And he's got a study to look at alternatives that they'll be doing over the next year to see if there are any other viable options.
513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk with John and Colerain. Hi, John.
Hi. Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good. Go right ahead, John.
We've been talking about this for a number of years, and one of the main uses of the bridge is Ohioans going into Kentucky to go use the Greater Cincinnati Airport. Mm-hmm. And I'm proposing that the state of Ohio and the federal money be diverted to high-speed rail or mass transit to the Dayton International Airport, and then Kentucky doesn't have to worry about traffic from Ohio transversing the bridge.
Well, that could be a viable option, but it seems to be a tough sell considering how contentious and how hard it was for Cincinnati just to get the streetcar built. I don't know how you're going to get Kentucky and Ohio to come to an agreement on that, but I mean, people have mentioned that. I just don't know how politically you could get it done.
Yeah, it sounds like it would open up a whole new debate, mm-hmm, outside of the need to replace the bridge. 513-419-7100, and let's talk with Keith in Westchester. Hi, Keith.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a way to get people to want to have a toll bridge.
Okay.
Put electronic signs every half mile north and south of the bridge going back 5 miles, and as the traffic backs up, put on the sign, for the cost of a $2 toll, you would have saved 30 minutes on your journey home. and seriously, you need to convert this to time. People keep looking at tolls as money, but tolls are really a way to save time. And if, mm-hmm, the Better Business Bureau or the business councils would pay for these signs, and so every day people say, God, for $2 I could be home for dinner a half an hour early. Suddenly these taxpayers that don't want tolls will be screaming for the tolls.
Keith,
because you've got to change the paradigm. It's not tolls, it's time.
Keith, thank you so much. And that's interesting that he brings that up, because I think one of the things that Mark Polosinski said in the editorial was, yeah, there's a huge, what do you call it, a delay toll. Mm-hmm. The fact that people are delayed and businesses are delayed on that bridge costs, I think he said, hundreds of millions of dollars every year.
Sure. Yeah, and that has been a big argument that Ohio and the Northern Kentucky Chamber have made. The opponents are digging their heels in the sand. But when I talk to just the average, you know, like people that aren't involved directly in the center of this debate, they seem to accept the fact that, oh, tolls have to be done, then that's fine. I can accept that. But that's not the vocal group that you hear about. And until that happens, there won't be the political will to, I think, push it through.
Mm-hmm. And I think that happens a lot. You do have a very vocal minority who maybe get more representation than they otherwise would. It's not necessarily the public sentiment, but it becomes that because those are the people speaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk with Kathy in Delhi. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, I'm calling because I want to ask the folks that don't want to pay the tolls if they are going to contribute to the mess when the bridge finally falls in through years of neglect.
Well, according to the transportation cabinet, it's outdated. There's no imminent.
It's not structural. I think the term is it's not structurally obsolete.
Yes.
It's functionally.
Yes.
Obsolete.
Is that so? They said there's no danger, at least in the next 20, 30 years, of it collapsing. But it is something that has far outlived its usefulness and was designed for half the amount of traffic it carries.
Right.
So according to the transportation experts, there's no imminent danger. But the biggest issue that there is – that's not to belittle the safety issue, though, because there are no berms or any place to pull over. So if you break down on the bridge, I mean, God help you. I mean, it's you had that a few years ago where a guy got rear-ended because he broke down on the bridge and flipped over.
Yeah, and like you're saying, it's outdated. It's hard to believe it's over 50 years old at this point.
Yes. Yeah, 1962, I believe.
513-419-7100. James in North College Hill joins us now. Hi, James.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, James.
I was wondering, I drive a truck throughout town every day, and the roads on the Ohio side are very bad. Like, right by the Lytle Tunnel, that road is horrible. How much would the city save in money by all the trucks, drivers bypassing the toll bridge and going around 275, and could they put that money saved towards maybe helping to pay for that bridge?
To pay for the money saved by diverting.
So in other words, if you don't have if the trucks say, I'm not going to pay the toll to cross the Brent Spence Bridge, I'm going to go around and take the 275 loop. Am I following you so far, James?
Yeah.
I'm going to take the 275 loop around town, use it instead. So reducing truck traffic as a result of being told, he's wondering how much that might save the city. Now, I don't think there are any exact figures on that kind of thing.
No. The only thing that I know that's being looked at and that's being pushed that's kind of similar to that, I don't know if it's necessarily saving money, but it's an alternative to the Brent Spence Bridge, is the Eastern Bypass, which Ohio opposes. But it would create a east-west highway in the southern end of northern Kentucky and connect with 275 in Ohio, and it would divert traffic from the bridge. But they say that would actually be like almost double the cost of the Brent Spence Bridge project, according to OKI. So a lot of people in the transportation industry don't see it as feasible.
Let's talk to Jerry in Covington. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, I'm Jerry Stricker, former Covington Pro Tem.
Hey, Jerry.
Mayor Pro Tem, and know Scott very well.
Yes.
And I made a proposal for over the last several years, and some people like it and some people don't. I want to build a new bridge and make one of the two bridges toll that's used for the interstate through traffic, leave the other bridge untolled, and that will not hurt Covington or northern Kentucky cities. And I talked to Robert Hands about this at the Kentucky Highway Department, and of course he told me just recently that it's a dead issue because the legislators have voted not to have tolls. But I think if we could get our people together, and this one, my proposal is a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
For example, my children or my family members drive from Fort Mitchell to north part of Cincinnati for their work, and they get in traffic jams, they lose time, they lose gasoline money, cars idling. Sometimes they call me when they're on the road and they're out on 275, they had to bypass it.
Hey, Jerry, I hate to cut you short, I got to hit a break here. But when we get back from the break, we will talk about what you're saying here. So thank you very much, Jerry, we appreciate it. We will continue our discussion of the news from Northern Kentucky. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition. Thanks to Douglas Gilb for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon, Cincinnati and Kentucky Inquirer River City's reporter Scott Wortman and Northern Kentucky Tribune managing editor Mark Hansel. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jerry Stricker was talking about his idea of a toll bridge and a non-toll bridge side by side as an alternative.
That's an interesting idea, and I've not really heard it pushed by the powers that be or really even brought up much. Although, I mean, they could do that. The issue, though, that I see is politically, no politician, particularly state legislators, which they're the votes that would count on this, they don't want to go on record as supporting tolls in any way. It's just politically untenable. And with Steve Beshear, who was one of the bigger proponents of the new bridge, he's no longer in office. There's no will anywhere else around the state to push for any compromise. Their attitude is, well, if you don't want it, fine. We'll go focus on transportation projects elsewhere.
Let's take one more call concerning the Brent Spence Bridge, and I'd like to move on to another topic. Sure. But let's talk to John in Fort Mitchell before we move ahead. John?
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Good. Go right ahead.
You know, I think some of the issues that I don't really hear about is that, you know, if we do accept a toll on this bridge, it kind of negates the fact that our tax funds that were, you know, were meant for highway infrastructure, the things that made this country great, aren't going towards the things that they need to go towards. So basically, if we accept this toll, we're basically accepting a double tax on our infrastructure. And the point is that 75 is a main vein through this country, mm-hmm. and it should be a major concern of the federal government and any other local government and state government that, you know, this needs to be maintained and it needs to be updated because, you know, it connects the north part of the country to the south part of the country. So, you know, any kind of comments on that would be greatly appreciated.
Sure. Okay, thank you, John.
That's definitely a valid point. And that is an argument that Northern Kentucky United, the anti-toll groups, make. And it is an issue. The problem is, and why nothing's happened with that, is you got to convince a lawmaker from California to agree, like, okay, we'll pay for your project, but we'll when they're tolling bridges on the West Coast, the East Coast, and places that have dealt with tolls for years, it's just a hard sell politically.
And, you know, it's interesting. This is a topic that, and I apologize, won't be able to get to all the phone calls we've gotten about the Brent Spence Bridge today, but we have some other topics we need to move on to. But whenever we bring this up, this seems to really, this seems to touch something with people. I mean, this is an issue that it amazes me.
I think it gets to the heart of the split between how people view the different views of the government's role. And I think this kind of just gets to that, where, you know, which side do you feel the government should be more involved? Do you feel it's more on the private sector? And I think it just really hits that chord.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where it's been acknowledged as the one of the top infrastructures, if not the top infrastructure issue for our region, if not nationally as well.
And President Obama, when he first took office, was in front of the bridge saying this is the example of why we need to invest more in infrastructure.
Yet here we are. How long, Scott?
Well, I think that was like 2009, 2010.
Yeah. And how many more years do you think we're going to be discussing this?
I mean, I don't see any progress. So, I mean, I would be surprised if anything happens in the next 20, 25 years,
wow.
Honestly. I mean, I could be wrong, but there's been no progress.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's the thing is you mentioned 2009, 2010. And as more time goes past, people tend to question, you know, if the need really is as serious, and you know, I don't think we have to worry about the bridge falling into the river at any point, but there's no question that anybody who's seen an accident on the Brent Spence and has sat in traffic for hours, as Scott and I have tried to get to meetings in Northern Kentucky, it's a major inconvenience. But
yeah. And it certainly is, and you're right, Mark, it's functionally obsolete, as I keep saying. That's the term that the government keeps using for it. But it is a huge inconvenience. So maybe at some point, maybe I hope that it's not 20, 25 years, Scott.
Yeah. It's out of my hands, though.
Yeah.
I appreciate your optimism.
Yeah. You were talking earlier about how this impacts the Covington mayor's race. There was interesting development in the Covington's mayor's race that you wrote about. The FOP.
Sure. Yes.
And endorsing Joe Meyer.
Yeah, it's this kind of anti-establishment fervor that's been running through Covington for a while. Sherry Caron said she was kind of nonchalant about it. Sherry Caron, the incumbent mayor, she's been mayor since 2012. I've never really had the support of the FOP. She claims it's because they've had to make tough decisions during the recession. Joe Meyer, who's the former Democratic state senator, he says that the city's priorities have been backwards, that when they cut the police department, the fire department, along with the rest of the city over those years, they weren't making the right decisions. And he told the FOP that I will put you as a higher priority, and they believed him.
Covington does not have a strong mayor system, though.
No, it's so the city manager.
How much would he actually be able to deliver?
Well, and Joe Meyer said that, too, that he's a vote on commission, basically, and he would try and steer the debate more towards that. How he would do that, though, I don't know. But it's, I guess, going to be a matter of how dissatisfied Covingtonians are with the city.
Mark, how's this particular race shaping up in terms of the support that's being generated for each of the candidates?
Well, I think, you know, you don't want to gauge a race, obviously, or skew it, but I think there is a lot of support for Joe Meyer, and I think with, mm-hmm. you know, with an incumbent in a city that has the challenges of an older river city, the incumbent is, you know, going to have to face that. And I think that's one of the big things that Sherry is dealing with right now, Mayor Caron. And, you know, she has grassroots support, too. A lot of people who like her really like her. And I would be reluctant to call this race this early. But I think Mr. Meyer certainly has a lot of support.
It's going to be interesting because Sherry Caron, when she was on city commission, she was consistently a top vote getter. But her support is not really very vocal. Not as vocal as a lot of her opponents have been in the past. She's largely self-funded her campaign. The last finance reports, she had 20 out of the 31,000 she raised, she put in 25,000. Whereas Joe Meyer raised 48,000, and a lot of that was from elsewhere. Home builders are really getting behind, like the Home Builder Association is getting behind Joe Meyer. They don't like what they have to deal with the current city administration, they say. But it'll be interesting to see if Sherry still has the large silent support that she's enjoyed in the past or not.
Yeah, and just because she's self-funding doesn't mean the support's not out there. I mean,
that could be
a positive thing as well, that she's not going to ask for donations. He's going to take care of paying.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to leave that impression. I just said her support is not as necessarily up front or in the media as much, but it seems to be there.
Another thing I'd like to talk about before we wrap up the segment, the Department of Justice dropped the Kenton County Commonwealth's Attorney's Office from its National Seizure and Asset Forfeiture Program. First, what's that program about?
Well, it's the feds will, in the process of criminal investigations, seize funds and dole out the funds to government agencies and prosecutors. And it can be a large source of income for local law enforcement and prosecuting agencies. Like, I think the feds, we did a report earlier this year by my colleague James Pilcher, who the feds seized $7.5 million at the airport alone in illegal contraband between 2010 and 2015. And the issue came up with Rob Sanders, who's the prosecutor, the chief prosecutor.
He's the Commonwealth attorney, okay.
Where there were some improprieties, record keeping, funds not being tracked properly, and he eventually paid. They stopped giving him the money, and he eventually paid back the $68,000 that he owed the feds. But we're just getting glimpses of questions being raised around the prosecutor's office there. The Covington Police Department last month issued an order saying he's not allowed in the police department without an escort.
I was going to ask if there's a relationship between those two things.
I mean, we haven't been able to actually conclusively draw a connection between the two, but they're just questions being raised basically at this point. And all the police chief in Covington will say is we've lost trust in the prosecutor. He won't say why, but that's very unusual for a chief prosecutor to have a strained relationship with the biggest law enforcement department in his jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Mark or Scott, any idea on where this heads next with the issues that are surrounding the Commonwealth Attorney's Office?
I wish I knew.
Yeah, we'd love to know. I do think the people who have spoken about it say, you know, there's no indication that it's anything other than poor record keeping at this point. But, you know, that raises a question in itself.
And a lot of attorneys don't want to talk on it. I talked to one guy the other day where I was like, so what are you hearing about the prosecutor's office? Like, oh, look, my mom's calling. I got to go.
Yeah, let me criticize the guy who I'm going to have to sit in front of.
Like, oh, got to go.
Oh. Well, Scott and Mark, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it.
Cincinnati and Kentucky Inquirer, River City's reporter Scott Wortman, and Northern Kentucky Tribune managing editor Mark Hansel. Coming up, we'll take a look at a review of the news of things that are going on in the Cincinnati area. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We continue with the review of local news of the week with WCPO.com, WCPO Insider, opinion editor David Holthouse, WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jay, Howard, and David, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Good pleasure to be here.
You know, David, just when you think things can't get a whole lot worse with this heroin epidemic, this week has just been extraordinary. The Cincinnati area has seen what? It's like 88 overdoses?
Yeah, it's over 80 overdoses since Monday, just this week. And then if you go back over to the weekend, the Hamilton County Health Department put out a notice that there were roughly 30 overdoses in hospitals. So that's well over 100 overdoses, you know, in less than a week. So it's a crisis.
It is crisis level. Have we had any deaths as a result of this?
There's been 3 deaths. Really remarkable that there hasn't been more. You know, first responders have been able to respond, and I guess Narcan folks who have overdosed, but it's surprising that there haven't been more deaths. So it sounds like there's something that's gotten to the streets that is pretty deadly, maybe a fentanyl or this carfentanil that folks have been talking about, which is a large animal tranquilizer, which is
I think I've heard people refer to it as an elephant tranquilizer.
Yeah, it's found its way into the mix, and that might be the culprit too, but they don't really know yet.
Nothing for sure. If it is that's incredible, because you're talking about something that you use for a huge animal.
Right.
So,
right.
And I understand it's just like a couple milligrams of that will sedate an elephant.
Yeah, and they've even warned first responders to not test in the field for you know, for drugs, thinking that if it is this substance, carfentanil, that they might get incapacitated by it. Simply, if it becomes airborne, it can, you know, render you unconscious, I guess. So the Attorney General's office asked first responders to stop field testing drugs. So that's how dangerous it is. It just kind of boggles the mind that someone would actually cut heroin, which is bad enough, in with this carfentanil. It's mind-boggling.
So wasn't this something I think local health officials were – this is something they actually had feared at one point. Right. Earlier this summer, they had actually predicted that something like this could happen.
Yeah, they did publicly warn about it. The Hamilton County Heroin Coalition warned about it. This had appeared in Akron, I believe. Akron had a similar spate of overdoses earlier this summer, and carfentanil, I think, was partly to blame there. And so they did warn about it, and now it looks like maybe it is on the streets here. They're still trying to find samples to test, but it's pretty clear that it's something other than your run-of-the-mill heroin.
So Governor Kasich was in town this week, and he was addressing Ohio's drug abuse epidemic. What were some of the things he had to say when he was in town?
Yeah, he addressed a meeting of criminal justice professionals from 9 states, and he talked about his efforts to shut down the pill mills in Ohio. And also his,
but that's been an ongoing thing. I mean, that's kind of something that's already said and done.
That started 5 years ago. I mean, yeah, it's still ongoing, and it was a necessary move. He also talked about his Start Talking program, which is a program to sort of open up conversations between teachers, parents, and kids. I was a little surprised that he didn't address the crisis that this community is going through right now, and that. Up north in Akron, a similar crisis. He didn't touch on that. He didn't make any announcement about further moves that the state could do or might do. It's a crisis that's just getting worse and worse, really, it seems, by the week. And it seems like it would call for some more state intervention. And it was a little surprising that he just really touched on those two things that they've already done, that when it seems like more needs to be done.
Yeah, so you talk about state intervention. I mean, are we talking about money, or are we talking about personnel, or what?
Yeah, I think both. The state's sitting on a surplus of a $2 billion rainy day fund. And actually, Denise Driehaus just a little while ago called on the governor to release $400 million from the rainy day fund to fight heroin and declare a public health crisis. I think that would be a good move. P.G. Sittenfeld and David Mann have also called on the governor to do the same thing. So that money is there in that surplus.
Because my understanding is the cost of Narcan just keeps going up and up.
Keeps going up, yeah. The market for it.
Right. And one of the problems I think they've had, too, is that Narcan is not working for this recent batch of heroin. It's laced with something else.
Right. You've got to use more of it. Mm-hmm. One dose isn't enough. It takes multiple doses, so they're going through it more quickly. And as you say, the price is going up. So there could be an issue with that, and ensuring an adequate supply of Narcan to all the first responders in the state, I think, would be a first step to take in this.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Derek in Coryville. Hi, Derek.
Yeah, two questions. One is Narcan certainly a lifesaver, but is it perpetuating the problem? Rather than getting treatment, people are just repeat Narcan intervention? And secondly, did people ever talk about the weak economy as contributing to this epidemic? Is there any data on that?
Yeah, great questions. I don't think Narcan is perpetuating this. I don't think any addict wants to overdose, and I don't think any addict really wants to be an addict. It kind of shows you how powerful the addiction is, that they keep going back to it despite the danger of it. And in order for them to recover and to get sober, they do have to be alive. So that is kind of the baseline, I think, is just keeping somebody alive. I think your question about the economy is a good one. And I think I don't know if there's any data to it, but, I think that the lack of wage growth, the lack of education opportunities, people being shut out of college education because of cost, all sort of factor into this sense of despair and hopelessness that some people are turning to heroin and drugs. There's a ready supply of heroin and pain pills to turn to, and I think that factors into it, which makes it even more complicated of a problem to deal with.
You had a really good editorial at WCPO.com that you wrote, where you compared this whole epidemic that we're having with heroin to what if this was an epidemic of Zika or some other disease? How would we treat the two in that case?
Right. I mean, look at what the state and the federal governments have done on Zika to try to prevent it from getting into this country. Same with Ebola from a couple years ago. Meanwhile, in Ohio, about 8,500 people have died over the last 5 years from heroin or pain pill overdoses. So this is a real public health crisis. Not to take anything away from what public health officials have done for Zika, but a similar type of response, I think, is necessary for this crisis that we're in right now.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Moving on to another topic, City Council held a special meeting this week, Jay. I kind of say that dubiously, special meeting. That was about the city manager status. So what's the story behind that?
Nothing.
Nothing. See, that's why that's it was a special meeting.
A couple of council members did call a special session. Council is on their summer break right now, so they only meet once during the month of August. So a couple of council members were concerned enough that they said that there were rumors going around the community that the city manager was soon to be replaced, and they wanted to have a meeting to show confidence in the city manager. And they
so did they?
Well, they verbally all there were first of all there were only seven of the nine members there. A couple of council members were out of town on vacation, so there was only seven of the nine at the meeting. All seven who were there verbally expressed support for the city manager. But when it came time to actually vote on a motion to show that support, it got hung up in a procedural rule. Since there was no motion on the agenda, it had to have immediate consideration. It takes six votes to do that, and only five members voted yes for immediate consideration. So it's still out there and could come back in September, but right now he has the verbal backing of seven of nine council members and the mayor, but as far as a formal vote, that didn't happen this week.
And the mayor is the one who can initiate the process
Correct.
Of firing a city manager with
But he can't do it. He can't
approval.
Do it unilaterally, though.
No.
Okay.
Council has to approve it, but he is the one who would initiate it. And he's been putting out statements, you know, joint statements with Black saying everything's fine. No problem here.
And
nothing
that's
to look at. Move on.
I would probably say there's public statements, and then what you hear and see behind the
right.
scenes.
Yeah.
There's certainly some tension.
There's something going on. There's some tension.
There's
yeah.
tension between the mayor's office and the city manager's office.
Who called this? Who called the meeting in the first
it
place?
It was council members Wendell Young and Charlie Winburn.
Okay.
And basically, their reasoning, and then that basically the meeting started out with Cranley praising the city manager kind of doing a self-evaluation, and then the council members were going back and forth about why would you call a meeting based on rumors? It's a waste of time, and no, these rumors are important because the last time we ignored rumors, the city's police chief was fired, and they're referring to there were rumors all throughout the spring of last year, 2015, that the police chief was going to be let go. The council members heard those rumors, and they just more or less ignored them. And September of last year, the police chief, Jeffrey Blackwell, was let go. And so Councilmember Young and Councilmember Winburn said, look, you know, we ignored the rumors back then, and we lost the police
yeah.
chief. There are rumors this time that the city manager could be next, and we didn't want to ignore those rumors.
Do you think the tension is because of the issue with the police and fire pay raises, or is there something else going on there?
I think this, from the sound of it, and I've only been told this off the record, that things have been rough for about the last year, and I think the issue with the union raises bypassing the collective bargaining process didn't help it any.
Yeah, well, and that's a political issue, too. I mean, you know, the idea of bypassing the city manager and having, you know, trying to force city council into voting on these raises is a political issue, too. I mean, you know, John Cranley wants the support of the unions as he goes into reelection year, which is next year.
And you might as well say the race for 2017 is already well underway, especially
yeah.
with
oh, yeah.
Councilmember Yvette Simpson announcing that she's going to be in the mayor's race. Anything that happens from here on out is going to be either you're with Mayor Cranley or
yeah,
you're with
right.
Yvette Simpson, or there could be a third council member running for mayor, too. And everybody's going to kind of divide up in camps, and the important things will probably get done, but there's probably going to be a lot of squabbling and bickering along the way between now and November of 2017.
Well, you're right. I mean, everything that happens from here on out at City Hall, you know, when they go back into session after Labor Day, you have to look at through the prism of a reelection campaign for John Cranley and a council race, you know, a council race, which is probably going to attract a very large field. Because, you know, now we have four-year terms instead of the two-year terms. I mean, it's a, you know, there's a whole lot of people out there who look at that and find that very attractive if they could, you know, getting 2 years of job security in the old days, but now you get 4 years of job security.
And I even wonder if the, and I know all the attention will be on the mayor's race because that's the city's top elected official, but there could be fundamental shifts on council.
Sure.
Because there's there's going to be at least two open seats because Councilmember Winburn can't seek another term because of term limits.
Right.
Yvette Simpson is running for mayor, so she can't run for council. And we're still waiting on Councilmember Kevin Flynn to announce what he's going to do. But the likelihood is...
The likelihood is he's not going to run. And so, that's three open council seats at least.
And so it... And basically, you know... whoever gets elected mayor can only hope that the majority of council sees his or her way. Otherwise, it's going to be a long 4 years.
So, Jay, do you think that Wendell Young and Charlie Winburn were successful? Did they succeed in putting the rumors to rest about the city manager? Or does that remain to be seen?
Somewhat. Probably one of the most interesting comments was there's other ways of getting rid of the city manager without firing them. Like, you know, suggesting that maybe they should stop, you know, we're not going to fire you, but perhaps you might want to start looking elsewhere.
Well, there's any number of ways they can make his life miserable, yeah.
And so
council members have been doing that to city managers for
and that's what I and this is almost, and Howard has certainly been here longer than I have, but I don't think there's ever been a point where they've actually taken a confidence vote in a city manager.
Yeah.
Normally
right.
never gets to that point
because
the confidence vote has already happened that they're gone.
Right. So sounds like it's going to be a long year till the election of 2017.
Right? Yeah. it's going to be a long and expensive year, too. I mean, there's going to be a whole lot of money spent, obviously, in the mayor's race and also in the council races, too.
And dare I ask this, don't they have a name at City Hall for what this time of year is referred to as?
Silly season.
Silly season.
And normally silly season doesn't start until after this year's general election.
No, like David was pointing to, it's starting early.
but the reason is starting early is because Cincinnati voters made a change in the charter. It used to be the mayoral primary was in September, and they moved it this year to May. So the mayoral primary will be in May of 2017. So it kind of advanced the clock, and that's why...
Well, that's why it starts earlier.
So silly season has started earlier.
And that's why you have this kind of a very strange situation going on in City Hall where these people, you know, the foremost thing in their minds is not who the next president of the United States is going to be. It's about, you know, them and about 2017 and the city elections.
Just one thing on the politics. It will be interesting to see since yesterday the city announced that the Fraternal Order of Police and the Code Union had reached tentative contract agreements. That was part of the reason for the tension was Mayor Cranley wanting to give raises to all represented employees. With that action yesterday, they have agreements now with the major unions. And the mayor put out a statement that he was happy that Code and the FOP came to agreement. But he also said that they were still going to work on equitable wages for fire, AFSCME, and the building trade. So they might have got some breathing room, but I still don't think that the issue of whether all these pay raises that he proposed earlier this month, I don't think that's completely off the table yet.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Reggie in Woodlawn. Reggie has a question regarding our discussion about heroin. And Reggie, go ahead.
Hey, first of all, I just had a situation last night. I was walking my dog pretty early in the morning, and this young lady had to walk past my house on her way to the hospital and said her friend just OD'd on heroin. So I just had a recent occurrence with someone who was in that situation. It's a pretty bad situation. But my question is, okay, I assume that, you know, people know, that law enforcement knows, you know, how this stuff works, you know, where it comes from, whatnot, but how in the world does a drug that has an elephant narcotic
ends up on the street and in this drug and in the hands of people who, frankly, aren't, you know, I mean, your drug dealers aren't bright people. I mean, they're not rocket scientists. So how does it end up in their hands?
Yeah, I think that's the big question, really, is where is it coming from? How does it get there? Who would be adulterating heroin with this substance, and why? There's some talk that fentanyl, which is another thing that's being laced into heroin, is coming from China and is being manufactured in China and coming through perhaps through Mexico. Why it's getting into heroin, I don't really know. I don't think anyone really understands that. But whatever's going on there is needs a lot more attention, I think, from you know, federal law enforcement and local law enforcement.
And let's talk with Charles in Cincinnati. He also has a question on the heroin issue. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
First off, I wanted to maybe throw some information on the question about the fentanyl, why people use it. I'm an ex-heroin addict, so, I mean, I've used fentanyl, heroin, and all that stuff like that. And, you know, it's the buzz. It's just, that's all it's about, you know. That it's not about what's in stuff. It's just about how you feel after you do it, you know what I mean? And my question is, you threw money at it. What do you think that's going to do to people that are heroin addicts that don't want to stop? You know what I mean? I mean, it's just. Yeah. I was in the cycle for 15 years, you know, and it was hard for me. I mean, I went to jail. I mean, I went to treatment centers.
So you're saying you made the decision? You made the decision to stop.
I had to finally make the decision. It didn't matter how much money my mom or my parents or whatever threw at me to try to fix it. It was just up to me to do it. If I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But I just wanted to know what kind of money, what do you think money would do for this problem?
Okay.
Yeah, great question. Obviously, and congratulations on staying clean. Yeah, obviously you have to want to get sober for that to happen. But, you know, I think money could be used to expand treatment. A lot of times if someone wants to get clean, there's no place to go. There's waiting lists to get into treatment facilities.
Well, the resources are very strained. Yeah, the epidemic is so great, the resources really are strained.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, that's, you know, the law enforcement people, you know, I mean, once they've got them down with Narcan, you know, they try to move them into treatment programs, you know, whether they want to go or not. But, they do try to do it, but they have to have the programs there. And, you know, enough capacity to be able to handle the number of people that we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
It just keeps growing and growing and growing. And that takes money.
It does. It takes money, and it won't happen overnight. The Cat House, for example, is expanding now.
Right.
But it's only a net gain of 15 beds there, which is good, but not nearly enough to handle it.
Right.
Well, David and Howard and Jay, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
WCPO.com, WCPO Insider, opinion editor David Holthouse, WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. Stay tuned for Science Friday, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Former Indianapolis Colts and Cincinnati Bengals tight end Ben Utecht sustained multiple concussions during his playing career and began experiencing memory loss at the age of 30. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll talk with Ben Utecht. We'll also hear about a new economic initiative to address challenges in Northern Kentucky. And in Focus on Technology, how researchers can tell if a brain is beginning to shut down. That's Cincinnati Edition, Monday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.